Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Sports Takeover on RMU Radio with Matt and Chris, and we have plenty to cover, so let's get to it. We're going to start in the National Football League, where we have a playoff picture starting to form. So we're going to talk about who the real contenders are in the NFL. Let's start in the AFC, Chris.
And we're going to start with the team that's at the top, the team that has just won their way to the top is the Baltimore Ravens. It seems like every week they have a new test, and without fail, Lamar Jackson and company find a way to get it done. This past week, it was against the NFC leading 49ers, no longer are, but they were going into the game. They were 10-1. They were facing a very good Ravens team. It was 17-17. It was a very close game until Justin Tucker hit a walk-off field goal at the end to give the Ravens the win. So I don't know who else the league can throw at the Ravens. They're just batting them away left and right. First the Patriots. They took care of the Seahawks, too. Add in the 49ers now. There's not really many teams left that they haven't proven themselves to.
Yeah, the Ravens are the best team in the AFC, both record-wise and based on what we've seen, based on just the eye test in the last month to 2 months. The Patriots are right behind them only because the Ravens beat them head-to-head. They sit at 10-2 as well in the standings. Number three in the AFC is the Texans, followed by the Chiefs, and then the wild cards currently are the Buffalo Bills and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right behind the Steelers are the Tennessee Titans, the Indianapolis Colts, the Oakland Raiders, and the Cleveland Browns, all within two games of each other for that last wild card spot. Now, the Browns losing to the Steelers this past weekend makes it difficult for them, I think, at 5-7 to get in, especially with as well as Tennessee's playing in Pittsburgh. Although they don't look very good when the offense is on the field, the defense is great. The team has won, I think you told me, 6 of their last 7.
Yeah.
So they are playing very well right now, and it's going to be difficult. Cleveland needed that game this weekend. They didn't get it. They're in a little bit of trouble now. Oakland and Indianapolis are in there at 6-6. Colts have been passed by both the Titans and the Texans. The Raiders, I still think, are going to drop off here at some point. The Bills at 9-3 keep winning, and I think you have to start taking them seriously if you haven't already. They beat the Cowboys this week. Not that the Cowboys are that impressive, but still, it's not a one-win team that they beat.
It's a reasonable enough win.
Yes. Chiefs and Texans then are both at 8-4. So the Bills have a better record than two of the current division leaders, but because they're still a game behind the Patriots, they sit at number 5.
And the Bills have a tough schedule the rest of the way. They face off still against, they play New England, they play Baltimore this week, they play the Steelers. Those are three teams who are currently in the playoffs. That's a lot harder than their schedule has been earlier in the season. They lost to the Patriots earlier, which is understandable, that's fine, but that makes it even more difficult if they had the thought of getting the division because they're one game behind them. The Patriots don't have that bad of a schedule here on out. But the Bills at 9-3, like you said, you have to take them seriously. I mean, I think you and I kind of have been. We've always been talking about teams like, oh, yeah, you know, the Bills are in there too. I mean, they were, I think, 4-1 or 5-1 earlier. But at this point in the season, it doesn't matter who you're beating. You got to win the games. As long as you get, you know, it probably is going to be 9 or 10 would be a good amount for the wild card. I think 10 should solidify it in the AFC at least. So sitting at 9-3 right now, they have a very good position looking forward.
Yeah, I mean, at 9-3, you've got a two-game lead over the Steelers and Titans, and then beyond that, it's a three-game lead, and there's only four games left to play, so I would have to think that they're in pretty good shape. Looking at the NFC, again, 10-2 has us at the top with the Saints in the number one position, the Seahawks behind them, also at 10-2. All the way down at number 5, we also have a 10-2. That's the Niners, as you alluded to earlier in the show, obviously in the same division as the Seahawks, so they cannot both be in that top 4, but one of the teams that is up there, also very deserving, the Green Bay Packers, are 9-3. The Cowboys are 6-6 because somebody has to be leading that division. Somebody has to get in the playoffs. Kind of disappointing years like this that is the way we have things set up, but it is. The Cowboys are in there right now. And then the second wild card is the Minnesota Vikings at 8-4 behind them. The Rams at 7-5, the Bears at 6-6, and the Eagles at 5-7, more so in the only in the division race, not in contention for a wild card spot, realistically, but that's the way things stand in the NFC.
And the NFC East has been pretty bad all season.
Horrible.
And
it's awful.
Last week, the Eagles had a golden opportunity to seize control of it. The Cowboys lost at home on Thanksgiving to the very good Bills team, dropped them to 6-6. The Eagles were 5-6, which isn't good, but they had a treat this week. They were playing the Miami Dolphins, and instead of taking care of business like they should, they let Ryan Fitzpatrick and company throw all over them, run all over them. They looked bad. They looked very bad, and that's not a game you can look bad in. I mean, obviously, losing doesn't hurt them extremely much because the Cowboys are that bad, and they play each other next week. So as long as they stay on pace, pretty much anything that happens will be washed as far as next week is concerned. But they had a position where they could have seized control, and if they can't seize control against the Dolphins, who can they seize control against?
And they were up by, I think, 2 touchdowns. Definitely yeah. 2 scores. I think it was 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, they were up early.
So to lose a game.
Was that home, too? Was it at home?
No, it was in Miami. But regardless, to lose when you're in the playoff hunt, in games that you need to win, these are the type that fall into that category. And any game where you have a 2-touchdown lead, regardless of who you're playing, should turn out to be a victory when you're in this type of a race for the division. So that hurts. But, of course, they do have another crack at the Cowboys, which could ultimately decide who wins this division at 7-9 or 8-8 or whatever record these two teams may end up.
Could also be the Redskins, who at 3-9 mathematically have a chance to win the division.
Which says enough all on its own.
Yeah, about just how bad they are. And the Cowboys should be better. They have a talented team on
paper. The Eagles should be, too. They both should be.
They both should have good offenses. You have Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, and Amari Cooper. Those are, I would say, all top 10, if not top 5 players at their respectable positions. And their defense isn't bad, yet, I don't know, it's not driving. I mean, I know why it's not. It's because of Jason Garrett. I think Jerry Jones knows that, but whether or not he wants to accept that as the reality lies within his plans for the team. But I think everybody has seen Mr. Handclapper on the sideline not doing much for his team is, once again, not doing much for a team that should be better. Just put in perspective, the Steelers are 7-5. They're missing pretty much everybody on offense. Defense is good, but everyone on offense has been rotating around between new guys, second-year guys. Like, it's not Bell and Brown and Ben anymore, and yet this team is 7-5. And the Cowboys have the roster they want on offense, and they're 6-6. They're barely in a playoff picture, but they are definitely not a contender, though.
For what it's worth, too, I believe they started the season 3-0.
Yeah,
correct me if that's wrong, but puts them at 3 wins in the last 9 games. Ouch. So clearly they are not a playoff contender. Who do you have at the very top? The contenders, the teams to watch, the front runners.
So despite losing to the Saints, the Seahawks have to be... Seahawks have 2 losses on this season. They lost to the Saints by 1 score. They lost to the Ravens by 2 scores. The Ravens game, it was not good. The Ravens played very well. The Saints game, though, was very close throughout. I mean, they lost by 6, and they have beaten the Niners, hence why they control the division now. A good win against the Vikings team, which was important for their wild card picture, but ended up propelling them into first place in the division because of the Niners falling away. A lot of their games are close, but with Russell Wilson at quarterback, it's hard to doubt them. And along the rest of the way, they have the Rams this week, which they should take care of business. The Rams are not as good this year. They're playing better recently, but they're not as good as they were last year. Panthers aren't the best. Cardinals aren't the best. And at the end of the season, they do play the Niners again, which that could be a very pivotal game
could be the difference between a bye and going on the road in the wild card round.
It could be the difference between home field and going on the road in the wild card round. I mean, whoever loses that game probably will have to play the Cowboys or Eagles. Which is
essentially a bye anyway. It's just,
but
you know,
it's still added inconvenience. Yes. Whereas the other team maybe gets home field throughout the first 2 games if they, you know, win the first. So those two for sure are at the top. The Saints, I mean, they are 10-2, but I don't know. I have questions about them. They were 5-0 with Teddy Bridgewater, and with Drew Brees, they don't seem to be clicking as much. You don't really hear as much about Alvin Kamara. Michael Thomas, though, is pressing every single button that you can possibly press. Most receptions in the league, most yards. He's on pace to break records. He is doing it all, but it just doesn't seem like they're as dominant as they should be.
So I have 6 teams in my top tier, 6 teams that I think are all equally capable of winning. You talked about the Niners, the Seahawks. I have both of them in there. You talked about the Saints. I have the Packers in there as well. So when I look at the Saints and the Packers, I see similar teams. I see teams
they
that
are
on paper are very complete. At quarterback, have a championship guy. Obviously, the Packers have a first-year coach, but for the Saints, Sean Payton's there as well, Super Bowl champion coach. I also see, though, with these two teams, inconsistencies, and that's where with a Green Bay, you see losses to Philadelphia and the Chargers. That's why with New Orleans, you see a loss to Atlanta. But at the same time, they have very good wins on their resume. They have proven guys on their rosters. And on paper, I think they're two of the best teams in football, especially the Saints, because that was my preseason pick to win the Super Bowl. So to me, these are teams that, if they're playing well at the right time, could be the most dangerous team in the playoffs come January. But if they're going in 2-2 in these last 4 games, losing some questionable games, then, you know, maybe they're not in this tier. But I think they have the potential to be. And I think at 10-2 and 9-3, they have to be in that conversation. From the AFC, I have the Ravens and Patriots. And to me, it's not even close after that. I think the drop-off is significant, even though statistically it's only one game to the Bills, two games to the Texans and Chiefs. I think it's the Patriots and the Ravens. And honestly, based on what I've seen, it's the Ravens pretty significantly over the Patriots. I mean, if I'm giving the Saints and the Packers points for having championship guys on their team, then obviously the Patriots have to be in that conversation, and I don't think anybody would say that they aren't.
No.
At 10-2 with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. But I would say that the Ravens are the front runner, probably in the NFL right now.
Absolutely.
For two reasons. One, because they're the hottest team right now, and two, because they probably have the easiest path to the Super Bowl. I mean, if you look at my top contenders, I have two in the AFC and I have four in the NFC. There's a chance that one of those four I said in the NFC won't get out of the first round because they probably will have to play each other. Not the case in the AFC. So those are my six at the top.
So the two areas I differ with you are, I'm going to start with the Packers. Okay. I didn't include them in the three I listed because they played the Niners last week. They got destroyed. They looked very bad. Aaron Rodgers didn't even play the whole game because they were losing so badly in the fourth quarter. They're like, well, this game's a wash. We don't need him out there. And that was worrisome for me because I did pick the Niners in that game, but I was very 50-50. It could have gone either way, Packers or the Niners. However, they did not show up in a primetime game when Aaron Rodgers typically shows up in primetime games. Was it Sunday or Monday Night Football? One of the two.
I want to say Monday, but I'm not sure.
It was one of the two. The Ravens blew out the Rams on the other end of the night spectrum that weekend. But that's the prime stage to show that, okay, we are the Green Bay Packers. We are at the top of the NFC. We are playing a very good team, and we need to show up for. The Ravens did that when they played the Patriots. They showed up. They're a good contender. Even the Texans did this past week when they played the Patriots. They played very well against them on Sunday night. I don't have the Texans in my top, though, but I also don't have the Patriots as high as you do. The Chiefs are looking very good right now. They are finally clicking. They had a little bit of trouble in the middle. Mahomes got injured. There's always been questions on the defensive end. But right now, they're playing very good football. Tyreek Hill is back, fully healthy. He's the most explosive player on their team. If they can continue to play this, they might be the only team that can rival the Ravens. I'm not convinced that the Patriots, as they currently look, can. In general, I think they can, but they can't play the way they've been playing if they want to have any chance to represent the AFC again.
Okay. Behind those top contenders, teams that you think could make a push?
Minnesota, only because of their record, not because of how they've looked against important teams. They lost a game to Green Bay earlier. They lost to Seattle. I mean, at some point, you have to beat the teams ahead of you. While they can beat the teams behind them, I'm not convinced that they can beat those guys ahead of them. They do play the Packers again, which could end up being for their division if it comes down to it. They're only one game behind them, so that game easily could swing their way, but they're on the outside looking in. I'll put Green Bay, I think, is somewhere in the middle of those two. Sometimes they look bad. Sometimes they look good. They're better than Minnesota, but they're just not as good as the rest. I'll throw them in their own category. In the AFC, I'll put Houston and New England in the same one. Houston is a lot like Kansas City, just a little bit less efficient. Deshaun Watson is just a little bit below Mahomes, but if he can look as good as he did this past Sunday, there's a lot they can do. But they still lost to the Ravens, though, which is a problem. And the Chiefs are one of the only two teams to beat the Ravens, the other being the Browns for whatever reason. And I guess the Patriots will get thrown into that. I think the Patriots and Packers are comparable. They're like kind of in the middle on both sides.
That's fair. I think I agree with most of those. I have the Chiefs in that category. I have the Texans in that category. I have Minnesota in that category. I have Buffalo in that category, too, because I think at 9-3, they have 9 wins for a reason. I know they've played subpar teams, but they've beat them pretty good. I don't know that there have been a lot of questionable wins. I mean, they've kind of taken care of business. The reason I would have them down there is because of their weak schedule, and they'll have a chance to prove that. But I think the potential is there. For me, the only teams that are in the playoff picture that I don't have as either a top contender or could make a push are the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Dallas Cowboys. Regardless of who wins the NFC East, they should not go anywhere.
They shouldn't.
I mean, on paper, they have the potential to, but looking at what they've actually done versus what the other five teams they get in will have done, it's no contest. It's any of the other five. It's not them at all. Looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers, yes, they've won 6 out of 7. Yes, their defense is fantastic, but their offense is horrific. The play calling's bad. The execution isn't horrible given what they actually have on the field, but I can't get over the play calling, and it's hard to watch sometimes. So if they put together a real offense, absolutely they can make a push to go with that stout defense. I just don't think that they will come up with an offense in the next month.
No, and I almost don't want them to. I feel like if the Steelers do make the playoffs, they're going to face New England or Houston or Kansas City. I don't think they can beat any of those three teams. They could, but I don't think in the playoff on the road against one of those three teams, I just don't think it's going to happen. Especially when, regardless who's going to be under quarterback, it's going to be someone who has no playoff experience. Most of the team, frankly, at this point, doesn't have a lot of playoff experience. It's been a lot of new players assembled in recent years. I mean, yes, there's talented players all around, especially on the defensive side, but when you look at people who know how to get it done in the trenches, it's really a few guys on the offensive line, and that's, and Mike Tomlin, of course, but that's really all it is. So if they make them, it's, you know, okay, I guess, but what's the point? And yeah, whoever wins the NFC East, they don't even belong in the playoffs. It's just a consolation prize. I noticed you didn't say the Rams, and neither did I. I don't think that either of us have them in the playoff picture, do we?
No, I mean, obviously they're not statistically in the playoff picture as far as a team. And I thought about putting a team that's on the outside looking in as potentially could make a push. And if the Rams fight their way in, they would have to be playing some pretty good football and certainly could become dangerous. I just think they have no shot at the division.
No.
Realistically, they have no shot at the division. And these wild card teams in the NFC are really good. I mean, looking at the AFC, like I said, the Browns probably won't get in. The Raiders, I don't think, are going to get in. The Colts, maybe if they play a little bit better, but probably not.
No.
The Titans are playing well at 7-5, and I like the Titans, but not enough to knock off a Baltimore. And the Bears or Eagles, if they get in again, probably not. So
the Bears are out.
The Rams are the only team on the outside looking in that I think you can make a case for, but I think they are fighting quite the uphill battle to even get in.
Yeah, you made a good point. As it currently stands, no, don't do that. You can't put them in that position. However, if they make the playoffs, the reason will be because they beat good teams, so they will be in a much more favorable position. Like you said, division's out of the question, but a wild card is still in there. And if they get lucky enough and somehow get to the second, the top wild card, they have a date against the Cowboys or the Eagles, which is
makes life a little easier.
Very desirable. And the Titans, I think, are a little bit better than the Steelers. Tannehill's playing very well for them since they shift away from Mariota. He's actually running a good offense. Derrick Henry looks very good. And I don't think we've ever questioned their defense. It's always been, their defense is good. What's their offense going to do? They're very similar to the Steelers, I think. It's going to be interesting to see which of those two end up being the sixth seed. Maybe the Raiders can play spoiler, but I don't think they are in the same tier as them.
Yeah, we'll see. There's 4 weeks left in the regular season.
Is it really? Only four?
That's it.
Wow.
That's it. Let's switch focuses now to college football. The regular season is complete. We're talking conference championships. We're looking at the college football playoff that's on the horizon. As it stands right now, our top four look the same as they have here in recent weeks. Ohio State, number one, LSU at two, Clemson at three, and Georgia at four. We have some big conference championship games coming up this week. Chris, where are you at with those?
So the Big Ten will be a top 10 matchup because I think the polls. So I read a few different things about this. I start to agree with them. I think to make some of these teams look better, specifically the Big Ten, they are elevating teams' ranks simply for the sake of amplifying Ohio State's resume. Wisconsin's ranked eighth. They face off against Ohio State this week. I don't think Wisconsin's the eighth best team in the nation. They got blown out the last time they played them, and they lost to an Illinois team, which you shouldn't lose those games. There are teams below them. I mean, yes, Alabama lost this past week, but I think I would take Alabama over Wisconsin as it currently stands. I think most bettors probably would too. Michigan, they threw in the top 10 for their matchup this past week, but I don't think they were a top 10 team for that game either. So yeah, Big Ten's 1-8, but in my mind, it's 1-14, maybe 15. I mean, Wisconsin's good, don't get me wrong. They're just not the eighth best team, I don't think. It should be a cakewalk for Ohio State. And another game that's a cakewalk is Clemson versus, all right, spin the wheel. Who's it going to be this year? Oh, we land on our Virginia. That's a different team. Virginia's better this year. They're 9-3. They did beat Virginia Tech last week for the first time in 15 years, which is tremendous for them. And their prize is a date in Charlotte with the reigning champion who hasn't lost a game in 2 years. So that one's pretty much a wash.
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect either of those to be very competitive. We do have three other ones, though, in the Power Five that are very competitive, I think.
Yes.
In the SEC, you've got number two LSU and number four Georgia, which of all the games have the biggest playoff implication, obviously, as both of these teams are currently in the college football playoff picture. So that's a big one. Big 12, we have number 6 Oklahoma and number 7 Baylor, a rematch of earlier in the season when Oklahoma won 34-31. Obviously, the winner here takes the Big 12, certainly puts themselves in a position to squeeze into the playoff picture, assuming they get a little bit of help. The loser, obviously, is out. Pac-12, you're looking at number 5, Utah, and number 13, Oregon. So a couple of teams there with only one loss for Utah, 2-4. Oregon, so that'll be a good one as well. As far as looking at the college football playoff goes, I think we have two teams here that are locks. No matter what happens, I think they're in.
I agree with Ohio
State, and that's LSU.
Absolutely.
I don't think it matters one bit. You're looking at Ohio State with wins against Penn State, wins against Michigan. A loss, assuming they lose the Big Ten title game, their only loss on the season would be to the number 8 team in the country.
Quote unquote.
You don't necessarily agree with that ranking, but regardless, that's the way it'll be looked at.
That's where they are.
One loss, it's a top 10 loss. I don't see them falling from 1 the whole way out. I think if they lose, they come in at 3 or 4, whatever, they're still in. Same thing for LSU. They've got wins against Alabama, Florida, Auburn, Texas, who was in the top 10, top 15 when they played them.
For whatever reason they were, yes.
Either way, those are a lot of good wins. Assuming they lose the SEC title game, it would be their only loss. It would be to the number 4 team. To me, and we can argue about this all day because I don't think you agree with me, LSU, I think, is the best team in the country. I think they've proven that they should be number 1. Regardless, their wins versus what their one loss would be should they lose, certainly, I think, puts them still in the playoff picture.
I mean, you say they're the best team. They have the best resume this season. I think Ohio State is a better team than them. That's fine. We're never going to get anywhere if we argue about it because we believe what we believe. Neither of us said Clemson is the best team, though, which speaks volumes for a team that hasn't lost what they've won their last 27 games, and neither of us think they're the best team. They very well could be.
Sure.
We haven't exactly seen them against the better teams. We've seen LSU week after week after week just go against strong teams and just always come out on top. The Alabama game was a turning point for college football as a whole. It's been Alabama in the college football playoff each time. What, 5 years they've had a college football playoff. Alabama's always been in it. They will not be in it this year. That will be the first year they are not in it. They have played Clemson in the title game 3 times, and they threw Georgia in there once because Georgia likes to have fun too. And what, they went 2-2? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Bama has always been around. LSU hasn't been super relevant since 2011 when they faced off against Alabama in the title game and lost that game. They were able to knock off Bama and start the small downfall. Alabama's still an excellent team, but those are games that you're like, okay, Nick Saban and company, they're going to win. This past weekend against Auburn, I mean, in those two games, Alabama's defense gave up almost 100 points. That's not something you see from Nick Saban teams. That's not, you think Alabama, they're going to give up 40 points in those two games. Yet, Auburn, they managed to get it done. They're not in the picture, but they at least played spoiler. And LSU, their offense might be better, I think, than Ohio State's. I'm just not convinced as a team they are. But it's a new era for them. However, unfortunately for them, Joe Burrow will not be on the team next year. He will be making a lot of money for some bad team in the NFL right now as he is a grad student. He's going to be gone. But LSU hasn't really had a true quarterback since Jamarcus Russell over a decade ago. And we saw how that turned out in the NFL. Yeah, you're grimacing over there. But really, that's the last time they had anyone of excellence at quarterback on their team, like it or not. So
no love for Zach Mettenberger. That's all right.
No, not too much.
So we both agree that those two are locks.
Yes.
I think you've got two teams then that are locks if they win, Clemson and Georgia.
Yes.
And I think that obviously makes sense. They're in the playoff picture now. They get their wins, and it's taken care of. But they have to win. I'm not convinced that with either. If Georgia loses, they're done. That's a two-loss team.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's any chance they get in. A Clemson loss, I think they could still get in with a loss, assuming that Georgia and Utah also lose.
So if Georgia loses, yes.
Because that puts them at 2 losses that effectively they're done.
Yeah, so yeah, they'll be 12-1. If Georgia has to win to stay in, if they lose, they're out. That's a fact. So we'll play Georgia's losing right now. So we have Ohio State and LSU, they're in. Clemson has a loss, and Utah wins, that would probably be the 4. Unless Utah's win's not convincing, or maybe Clemson's loss isn't convincing. What metric are we using? Do they have to lose at all? Or, like, what if it's an overtime? Or what if they get blown out? Is the committee looking this in-depth, or are they just looking strictly at the win-loss. Like, if Clemson loses by three in overtime, that's not a bad loss. That's fine, in my opinion. They're 12-0, 12-1 with a 1 3-point loss, we fine. However, if they let Virginia torch them for a 3-touchdown advantage, that's probably going to raise some questions. But on the flip side of it, would you take a Utah or Oklahoma team that might not win very convincingly, or they do win convincingly? There's a lot of different factors that play into here. What factors do you think play into this the most, though?
Right. So here's the way I look at it a little bit. Clemson has kind of fallen from the top as the committee has dictated. They've started at number one. They dropped down to, were they five at one point? Four or five? They were out at one point, were they not?
The first playoff was, the first poll was released. They were out because Penn yes. State was four, and then Bama, LSU, and Ohio State
so,
were ahead of them.
So clearly at undefeated, they were not, the committee was not convinced that it needed to be Clemson. And since then, who have we beat in recent weeks? South Carolina, Wake Forest, NC State, like not teams that are going to change that significantly. While Utah continues to climb, the way I look at it is if Utah's trending one way and Clemson had been trending down, the only reason they've jumped back up is because teams in front of them have lost. I see Clemson, their only ranked win was against Texas A&M, who is now 7-5. Because they've played good teams, but
they've
regardless, that's their only ranked at the time win. For Utah, a win here is over number 13, Oregon. I think that would be enough to jump them. I think a Pac-12 champion, one-loss Utah team gets in over a ACC runner-up, one-loss Clemson team.
It all depends, though, because Utah has essentially played the same schedule that Clemson has. They have faced one ranked opponent this season. That was Arizona State. Arizona State's now 7-5. Texas A&M's now 7-5. That's essentially the same. Utah does have the one loss to an unranked USC team who is now essentially ranked the same as Virginia. So assuming Utah wins the Pac-12, they will beat another ranked team. Clemson loses. They have
similar records, similar losses.
Similar wins.
But a conference championship for Utah.
Right, which
should be the difference.
It should, but we've seen conference championships don't matter a lot if you have two losses. That would only be one loss, though. I would take Clemson over Utah if they would play head-to-head. I think the majority of America would. So, I don't know. They don't look at that as much, I don't think. They don't look at, okay, you know, which of these two teams against each other is better? It's more, what have these two teams done? And, I mean, Utah really has, they've had a few close games. They lost to USC by a touchdown. They beat Washington by less than a score. But most recently, they've been blowing teams out. Clemson had a one-win victory against UNC. And since then, they have put up 45. Besides, last week they put up 38. They've put up 45 twice, 59 twice, 55 and 52. I mean, they're playing very good football right now. It's just that I really don't know. And it depends a lot if Utah blows out Oregon or if it's a small margin. It's all the things they need to look at.
It's all very interesting. But what started all this is I think Clemson can get in with a loss.
Yes.
If Georgia and Utah lose as well. Because at that point, you've got LSU, you've got Ohio State. You would have your Big 12 champion, either Oklahoma or Baylor. And you would have Clemson in probably at number four.
Yeah, that's fair.
But that's the only circumstance I think that they lose and still get in. If they lose and Georgia wins, obviously you've got LSU, Georgia, Ohio State, and your Big 12 champion. Or if Utah wins, then Utah gets in potentially over Clemson. But that's the discussion we're having. So it's a very, very small chance that they get in with a loss. But obviously a win, and they're fine. Big 12 champ needs some help, but I don't think needs a lot to get in. If Utah loses and Georgia loses, I think your Big 12 champion is in. No questions asked.
The easiest likelihood is the top three win. Georgia would lose. Then you get Utah versus the Big 12 champion. That's probably the most difficult conversation that everybody's having right now.
Right.
Because Oklahoma has one loss in the year to an unranked team, similar to Utah. They beat Baylor once. They'll have beaten them twice if they win. They've beat Oklahoma State, who they're more along the same lines that the whole Ohio State point I was making was. Oklahoma State lost this past week to Oklahoma at ranked number 21. Ordinarily, you would see them drop out of the pool probably. If you lose in the bottom five, you'd tend to drop out. They stayed in at 24 just to give them another, oh, look, there's a team in the top 25 that they beat. Texas was 11 at the time they played Oklahoma. They are falling very far out of that picture right now. Iowa State's a team that seemed to float around there for a lot, and Oklahoma only beat them by one, but they're, you know, kind of padding the stats a little bit once again for these teams. Iowa State did fall out this past week, though, but they were in for some reason. They were going into this week, they were 7-4, which, why? Why are they in? Oh, to, you know, amplify their wins. And on the other side of it, Baylor has been very good all season, but they haven't really played anyone. They lost to Oklahoma. It was a close game. It wasn't a bad loss. They're very similar to Utah. If they beat Oklahoma, it will be very good. They will be 12-1. But which is better, the Big 12 or Utah? See, if Oregon wouldn't have lost 2 weeks ago, this would have made this so much easier, because Oregon would probably have been a lock. They would have had one ranked loss to a very good team this year, and they would have been a lock. But now, people don't give Utah as much credit. I think it goes back to the thing I said a few weeks ago. People look at the history of these teams a lot more than they should. They see Oklahoma's been in before. That would be the easy pick. They have Jalen Hurts. He's been in the playoff before. Let's throw them in. Utah is kind of a new kid on the block. You don't see them. You're like, okay, they're at number five. I don't know a lot about this team. So do we throw them in to see what's going to happen? I don't know.
I'll tell you what, though. Washington got in a couple years ago, so they don't think it's beyond the realm of possibilities for Utah to get in. But regardless, we're going to have a very exciting weekend of college football. And next week at this time, we can debate whether or not the right decisions were made.
As it was this point last year, Ohio State did not get in. That was the wrong decision. It seems like they are a lock this year. And one thing that is a lock is that we are going to take a break, come back in a few more minutes, better than ever. Please stay tuned.
I'm not afraid to
Welcome back to Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris here on RMU Radio. Let's move from college football, where there's a lot to talk about, to college basketball, where we don't quite have as much just because it's so early in the season, but it's worth updating. The top 10 as it stands right now: Louisville at number 1, Kansas at 2, Maryland at 3, Michigan at 4, Virginia 5, Ohio State 6, UNC 7, Kentucky 8, Gonzaga 9, and Duke 10. None of those teams have more than one loss. A lot of rotation has gone on in the top 10. We see a lot more ranked matchups in basketball because they play so many more games.
More fun that way, too.
Yeah, but there's more potential for things to shuffle. We've had upsets. We've had several number ones. I mean, we've had big upsets.
Like huge.
Unranked beating, random unranked beating number one. So there's been a lot happening. It's interesting. Doesn't mean as much yet, especially with the way the postseason is played in basketball, but It certainly gives you something to watch throughout the entirety of the year.
And if you don't think we're going to not come back to these games whenever March Madness comes out, you're mistaken. Because last week, Stephen F. Austin, a perennial March Madness team who, they win a few games in March Madness. They're a decent enough lower tier school. Well, they're a very good lower tier school because they knocked off number one Duke at home, 85-83 in overtime. Duke fell 10th because of that. Stephen F. Austin got a few votes thrown their way because why not? There's enough teams to vote for. But that's the first time Duke's lost at home to an unranked team in 20 years. That's just, you don't hear about
it. It's insane.
I mean, like I said, 20 years. I've never seen them do that in my lifetime. Usually they lose to UNC or Louisville or someone good at home, not Stephen F. Austin. And that comes on the heels of Kentucky being the previous number one we talked about last show. They lost to Evansville. They fell. Michigan State was number one at one point, and now Michigan State looks like they're struggling to keep themselves in the top 25. They lost to number two Kentucky when they were number one, that fell to 3. At 3, they then fell to 11 because they lost to unranked Virginia Tech. Last night, they just lost to number 10 Duke. They just keep losing, which is unfortunate for them. And on the flip side, you got another team in the state of Michigan that just keeps winning. The Wolverines were unranked this year. They beat number 6 UNC, number 8 Gonzaga in the same week. And they entered the poll at number 4, which is
just crazy.
And what's even better about them entering that high is they got 9 first place votes, too. Out of the 65 total, they received 9 of them, which is madness. But the team that is number 1, Louisville, played them yesterday, and Louisville was able to win 58-43. So they seem to be a pretty solid number 1. Michigan will fall back down to earth, but it was just crazy to see them jump up to number 4 from not being ranked. I think that was the biggest increase I saw like in 70 years or something. It's madness.
It would have to be. It's kind of crazy. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me whether they deserve to be there now or not. They should have been closer before.
They probably should have been ranked.
I just don't see how you could be voting and they go from unranked to, well, yeah, some of us will throw number one votes at them. I don't get that.
It's
weird.
That's
fine. And it doesn't matter as much right now because there's lots of time for things to change. And of course, the bracket certainly makes this a little bit different in terms of how important it is to be at the top versus the college football segment that we were just looking at. There is a big matchup tonight. Ohio State plays UNC. That's number 6 versus number 7. I think this is a good opportunity for Ohio State to prove themselves early in the season. I'm looking at them. I'm looking at Maryland representing the Big Ten, both in the top 6, and I think they both have,
Michigan too.
Have some, Michigan as well. But I'm talking those other two, I guess, because I'm not convinced that they are going to stay there.
They don't have the history of it.
Right. I mean, Michigan, obviously, in a week has beat more top 10 teams than these two have beat all season, early in the season, but still. So this is a good chance for Ohio State to prove that this is where they belong. Maryland will have their opportunity as well. But that's a big game tonight. You touched on some recent ones. I think the only other one I had was number 9, Gonzaga recently beat, then number 11, Oregon. Oregon's now number 13. Gonzaga's still at number 9. So that was a pretty relevant game that happened within the last week or so.
And there's a few other teams in the top 25 that are undefeated still that are common household names. Arizona's at number 12, 9-0. Auburn had a very strong run last year. They are number 14 at 7-0. So that strong run clearly has continued into this season. Good for them. Colorado's number 20 at 6-0, which you don't hear about and you probably won't hear about in a few months. But they're there right now, so we'll give them some credit. Butler enters at number 24. They are 7-0. It's not Brad Stevens anymore. It hasn't been for a few years. But they're there anyway. Indiana's also 8-0, but they're not getting any credit because, I don't know, people vote oddly. Maryland hasn't beat
anybody. Don't worry, they'll be number 7 next week.
Yeah, it depends upon who they play. Maryland has the same record as Indiana, yet they're 3. Indiana's unranked. They're both in the Big Ten. Whatever. It's early. It is about a quarter of the way through the season, though, so It feels like it's early, but
yeah, it does.
We're getting there. We're getting close to conference play, probably within the next month, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a little brief update on college basketball for you.
Another update we have is Major League Baseball free agency, believe it or not, is underway. All the other major sports, free agency is a big deal. Lots of signings on day one. MLB is not the case, as we talked about last year on the show. But we do have some names going off the board, Chris.
So I'm going to start with the biggest one that just happened earlier today. That is starting pitcher Zach Wheeler was with the Mets. He stays in the NL East. He goes to Philadelphia, 5 years, $118 million. That's a lot of money to give to a guy who was the number three starter on them. The Phillies are clearly hoping he can be better than number three for their team. He had a good ERA the past few seasons. It was in the threes each of the last two. Didn't get a lot of run support with the Mets, but we've talked about that a lot with Syndergaard and DeGrom in the past. Another big one, I think was the first big one that broke, was catcher Yasmani Grandal moving from Milwaukee to the Chicago White Sox, 4 years, $73 million. White Sox are making a few moves, too. They re-signed Jose Abreu for 3 years, $50 million. So they're trying to be relevant. They offered Wheeler more money, actually, than the Phillies did. I guess Wheeler just wanted to go to Philadelphia, whatever. He's loud. Doesn't matter to me where he goes. But the White Sox are trying to bring themselves to some semblance of relevance. The Braves also are trying to bolster their pitching, which we saw get much maligned by the Cardinals in the playoffs. They added Cole Hamels on a one-year $18 million deal. He travels from the Windy City to Atlanta. And they also strengthened their bullpen. They got Will Smith, the closer from the Giants. He goes to the Braves for 3 years, $39 million, which 13 on average for a closer is on the upper end. But he was, I think, second or third in saves last year. He did pretty well for a pretty poor Giants team. I'll take it away, Matt.
The other move that Atlanta made that I kind of like, Travis d'Arnaud goes there from Tampa Bay to fill the void at catcher. So I like what Atlanta's doing. They might be my favorite team in the mix here so far.
As they're currently standing.
None of these are small. None of these are gigantic, but they're all very good signings, I think, for that team. Milwaukee, you talked about them.
They're losing people.
Yep, they also lost Mike Moustakas. He stays in the division, goes to the Cincinnati Reds. 4 years, $64 million. Some other one, Adam Wainwright stays with the Cardinals. That's not huge news.
He wasn't going anywhere.
1 year, $5 million. He stays there. Drew Pomeranz goes from Boston to San Diego. He struggled a little bit last year, I believe, but that's a name that has had some big talks around.
He did better later in the year.
Okay.
He started to pitch better.
So he's going to the Padres. And then Jake Odorizzi is going to stay with Minnesota 1 year, $17.8 million for him.
That's a lot of money for Jake Odorizzi. Yep. I mean, he had a good season last year. I guess he's worth it.
Yeah,
the Twins need him, so that's good. D'Arnaud is going to be catching with Tyler Flowers, who's been with Atlanta for a few years. They probably wanted Grandal, missed out on that, but they were able to throw some money around elsewhere. No news on Cole, no news on Strasburg or Rendon. Both those two pitchers, though, are meeting with the Yankees this week, maybe even happen today. So I would be surprised if the Yankees didn't get one of those three guys I just named. They're the Yankees. They have a lot of money. One of the key places that's being linked to Cole, though, is the Angels. They are apparently going to do whatever it possibly takes to get him. They were who I said a few weeks ago would probably get him, so fingers crossed for that.
Very possible. I'd rather see him go there than the Yankees.
I think everybody would.
But we will continue to update this as it goes on, still early as far as actual movement goes. There was some movement, though, for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and we've talked about the new general manager. Well, now we have a new manager. Derek Shelton was hired, and he was introduced today, 49-year-old first-time manager coming over from the Minnesota Twins, where he was the bench coach for the last two seasons. Also was in Toronto for a year, was the hitting coach with Tampa Bay for seven seasons. Prior to that, he's managed in the minors in the Yankee system, but as I said, this will be his first time in the big leagues.
Yeah, he's also Cleveland's hitting coach from 05 to 09. That was his first splash in the majors, but he's a good guy. He was a good bench coach for the Twins. I believe that everybody on the Twins spoke very highly of him. They said he was very instrumental in their run. There's a video you can look up. There's a hitting thing for youngsters trying out baseball that he actually does a commercial for when he was the Rays hitting coach. It's like this ball on a bat that just teaches you how to do swing speed. I don't know. It's fun. You can look it up. Derek Shelton hitting video. It's interesting. It's fun. It's different, though. It's different than a guy who's been a manager for a while. It was Clint Hurdle. He was our manager for so many years. Managed the Rockies before that. Clearly had a lot of experience, but it seems like this is the era of, okay, new guys, just keep them rotating in. We're just going to fill these places with a bunch of new guys and see how it goes. In addition, Toronto scouting director Steve Sanders joins the Pirates as the assistant general manager. He was responsible for the last three drafts with Toronto. He's been with Ben Charrington since he was with Boston, so he's basically following him around. At 31, though, he's clearly going to try to be with his organization for a while until he moves to be GM of himself somewhere else, but it's another new move. Sure, why not? Throw it in there. We'll see what they can all do.
I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know a lot about any of these guys.
I don't either.
But I like it. I mean, the article I read about the introduction today for Shelton is that he's genuinely excited to be here, wants to make it a fun atmosphere to play in, and obviously based on the arrest that we had at the end of the season and the fights that broke out in the clubhouse, some fun is probably something that could be
overall
used.
Team misery.
Yes, fun would certainly be appreciated. So, and he's coming from a 101 win Twins team. Obviously, he's not the manager there, but certainly played a role in that, and hopefully that translates to turning around the 69 win Pirates team. My bold prediction 2 weeks ago, I guess, was that they will make the playoffs. Obviously, that's a stretch, and obviously that's bold, but I certainly like the pieces that they have in place at this point.
And instead of just moving around people that have been in these positions in different teams and not working out, they're trying to be a little bit more fresh, which I like it. It's a better approach. It's not going to be instantaneous. It's going to be a process. But we're here for the long haul, though, on these guys, so interesting to see how they work out. Some teams, though, are not here for the long haul on their coaches. It was originally going to start as an NHL-specific segment. We'll move into them a little bit later in the segment. It's going to be just the coaching carousel as it currently stands. I'm going to start in college football. So Rutgers hired Greg Schiano. He was their coach from 2001 to 2011. Was really the only time they were relevant as a football program. They have been god-awful these past few years in the Big Ten. I don't think they've won a Big Ten game in a few seasons. They're just horrendous. They said, all right, come on back, Schiano. Let's see if we can string together a 4-win season. So, whatever. If you like Rutgers football, which I doubt you do, there's something for you. A little bit bigger, though, Washington's coach, Chris Peterson, former coach of Boise State, he's resigning after 6 seasons with the team, a 54-26 record, a college football playoff appearance, 2 Pac-12 championships, a very good resume, kind of out of nowhere. But he said that there was a lot of stress and anxiety related to the job, so he just kind of wanted to take a break for a little bit, which is fine. Whatever, do what you need to do. They are promoting defensive coordinator Steve Lake to the head coaching job, so a little bit of a shakeup there in Washington. That's all I got for college football. But still in football, a bigger move.
Yeah, just real quick about Peterson. He is going to stay within the athletic department in some type of professional development role or something with coaches and players.
Just so hanging out then.
He'll still be there, just a little less stressful than the head coaching responsibilities. But going to the Carolina Panthers, Ron Rivera is out after over 8 seasons with the team. Regular season record of 76-63-1. Currently, they're 5-7, sitting at last in their division. He reached Super Bowl 50 with them, won Coach of the Year in 2013 and 2015. I suppose it was time for something to happen in Carolina. It's just, I don't know, this is a guy that seems very liked by the players.
Extremely.
Very successful in his time with Carolina. I mean, he's been there for 8.5 years, so he certainly has had his opportunity to get things done, but he is out.
So a few points to make. They never had back-to-back winning seasons, which it's, you know, that means a lot, I think, to a lot of teams. You want to see sustained success. They really didn't have it. They did make the playoffs 1 year as the 7-8-1 division champions.
Oh, that's right.
That was a bad year for the NFC South. I think they actually won the playoff game that year, too, against the third string backup for the Cardinals in the wild card game.
Yeah,
it was a rough time. By the way, you don't have back-to-back winning seasons. You're probably going to get canned earlier than 8 years. However, they did have some very good seasons. They made the Super Bowl at 15-1. I think it's a very similar situation to what we saw with Andy Reid in Philadelphia. The Eagles, yes, they've won a Super Bowl since they got rid of Andy Reid. I don't think they have been as good of a team, though, since they let Andy Reid go. They made one Super Bowl with him, a few championship games, but it just seemed like, what's the next step? Where are we going with this? He is a good coach. That will be somewhere else, Ron Rivera. Just the Panthers need to go a different direction. There's a big vacancy at the team that just beat them this past week, the Redskins. The Cleveland Browns coach is looking less and less like a professional NFL coach each day, so whoever scoops up Rivera will do very well. Another fun fact about him, when Mike Tomlin was hired, he was also a candidate for the Steelers, so a little fun tidbit for you.
Sure. It's an interesting situation because, yes, when you have that much inconsistency, there comes a point where it's time for both parties to move on. it's just tricky when you're losing a coach as good as Ron Rivera.
He's good.
Because the question becomes who replaces him. And I don't think you have any answers to that question that you would compare the two and say that's a better coach than Ron Rivera. It might be better for your team. It might be better in a given situation. But Ron Rivera is a very good coach. You're right. He will not be out of a job for very long. The Panthers will go in a different direction.
They do have North Turner on their staff. He's coached with the Chargers and the Raiders as their head coach before. So I don't know that he's going to directly transition, but they aren't exactly turning it over to the Wolves. They have some good hands.
That's fair. There's experience.
Finish the season for them at least, though, but it seems like they're going to be fresh start for the next year. Another team, as we transition to hockey, that's looking for a fresh start that matches what I said 2 months ago. It's the New Jersey Devils with John Hines, and they said, "See you later, John. We suck, and you're the reason why." 150, 159, and 45 in about 4.5 seasons. That's a bad record. He made the playoffs once. They only won one game of the four game or the five games they played. They just did not ever do well. It was supposed to be a rebuild process when he joined the team because they were fresh off of a Stanley Cup appearance 2 years before he came. Two or 3 years before he came. A little bit of a downward trend. He was supposed to rebuild, bring them back. They got Taylor Hall. They had all these first round picks, all these top draft picks, and yet here they stand, still as bad as they've been.
So I thought this was crazy. He was the fifth longest tenured coach in the National Hockey League when he was fired, second in games coached, and second in wins in Devils history. Doesn't that blow your mind just a little bit? Never would have guessed that any of those things were true for him.
The Devils had multiple cup appearances with Brodeur in the early 2000s.
And I would guess that whoever that coach was the only guy that's above him.
Wow.
Assuming what I read was correct, it's kind of crazy. But regardless, this season they sit at 9-14-4, which is good for 30th in the National Hockey League. So not very successful.
It's terrible.
Yes. Yes, it is. And in two of the last 3 years, they have finished 27th or worse, winning the NHL lottery twice and having the first overall picks that became Nico Hischier and Jack Hughes. So,
and neither are really showing as much as the Devils want them to.
No, and I mean, I don't dislike John Hines, but it's probably the right move for them. I mean, this was a Devils team that I was very high on before the season, and none of the players are really... P.K. Subban has not been good. Taylor Hall's been fine, but he hasn't been MVP Taylor
Hall. He's going to be shipped off.
Both those first-round picks that I mentioned that you said aren't playing that well... Just that, not meeting expectations.
Corey Schneider was sent down. I mean, nothing's good happening right now.
Nothing is going right for the New Jersey Devils. Alain Nazarene is going to be the interim that will attempt to turn that around. You look like you're trying to figure out who that is. He played for the Penguins at one point.
I knew the name. Yeah. It was a name that was familiar.
Played for the Penguins, was an assistant coach, I believe, at Wilkes-Barre Scranton. I don't know if he was the assistant to Hines at the time, but he was there at one point. So that's where you get that name from. But certainly some changes there in New Jersey. I suppose the good news for them is that it was voluntary.
Was it?
I mean, they chose to let him go.
As opposed to
the other situations that are going on where things are much less voluntary and teams are having their hand forced. We're talking abuse scandals. We're talking just weird stuff going
Racism, on. Racism, anything that's bad in America is being amplified by these coaches.
Bill Peters has resigned as the coach of the Calgary Flames amid accusations of racist comments, as well as player abuse when he was in Carolina, which was confirmed by now Carolina head coach Rod Brind'Amour. He said it was dealt with. I mean, I feel like to some degree it was for him to be so comfortable with saying, yes, it happened. Otherwise, he would probably be in some hot water himself. So I'm going to take him at his word and say that it was dealt with in Carolina, but I'm going to say whatever has happened before or since has not been dealt with so well, and that's why we've seen him resign. Mike Babcock, was not let go for these reasons.
But this he probably would have been, though.
He definitely would have been. He made Mitch Marner rank his teammates based on work ethic. That was early in his Toronto
days. When Marner was a rookie, he made him do that. What does he know?
Which is just absolutely an insane thing to do, and of course, he made that list public to the team, I believe, which just makes it worse.
Here's where Mitch thinks you are.
The worst one, though, and I'm sure that there's more, but this one is just crazy. When he was with Detroit, he caused then Red Wing Johan Franzen to have a nervous breakdown by verbally assaulting him on the bench during a game.
Johan Franzen was a staple with the Red Wings for over a decade, a very solid player for the team, well-liked.
And I believe this was first reported by Chris Chelios, who was playing at the time.
Yeah, Chelios was on the team at the time.
Now he's on the Red Wings staff somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it was confirmed by Franzen, who said something along the lines of, Mike Babcock's a great coach, worst human being I've ever met. Something along those lines. Said he was a horrible person.
Yeah, I mean, Franzen was having concussion issues at the time, which weren't as well known about as there is everywhere in the league all the time, which didn't help the, you know, the nervous breakdown or whatever. But, I mean, that's bad, especially when Chelios is like, yeah, that happened too. And there was another instance that Chelios said that, you know, he said something terrible to the team or whatever, and basically Holland was like, well, you want to play for us or not? Come to my office. And no one came. So, I mean, you know, coaches say stuff and that's fine, but to cause a guy to have a nervous breakdown, I mean, Franzen said he only started sleeping well in the last year, and he's been retired for about 5 years now.
Yes,
and I mean, this is a problem that's afflicted him greatly.
And he said what was said the cause of nervous breakdown was only the tip of the iceberg. So obviously more details are going to emerge about this, but it's not a good situation. And
rough.
Just one more name to add to the list is Mark Crawford, currently an assistant for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Not for long, I don't
was
think.
The head, well, he's on leave at the moment as
right.
They investigate. He was the head coach of the LA Kings at one point. Sean Avery said he was kicked by Mark Crawford during the 06-07 season. Patrick O'Sullivan had a tweet that suggested abuse during his time with the Kings as well, which would have been when Mark Crawford was the head coach. So he is also being looked into, and I'm going to guess there could be more names that come out of this. Regardless, I think we're seeing quite the change in the way things are coached here, and obviously this had no place ever anywhere, racism and abuse of players. But apparently there was a time where it was put up with to some degree, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it this far after. It would have been addressed sooner. But we're seeing changes happening now, and certainly we're seeing changes in philosophy by coaches, certainly being this hard on your players. This is a well above and beyond, but just in general, I think being that hard on your players does not work anymore, assuming that it did at one time. So I think this, it's good. I mean, it's not good for the sport, and it's
get
not good for the teams in the situation, but the fact that it's coming to light and being addressed, very important.
Yeah, there was one instance it was kind of used as a, you know, in with the Crawford situation, he said, well, this player spoke up, so you should, to the GMs, you like send them down to a lower minor league team. And that's not what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to make people feared. And the whole thing started with Akeem Olu. He's an African-American player. He was
from Nigeria, I believe.
Yeah, he was with the Flames. I mean, he never really surfaced in the league that much, but that's not extremely important. He played, you know, rap or whatever, and Peters used the N-word about his music many times. That's, he didn't deny it. He just apologized for it. Well, I don't think that's, apologies very sincere 5 years later after Alou brought it to attention. He met with Bettman the other day to try to move forward with the league, as they clearly need to. I mean, watching hockey, you can clearly see it's not a very diverse sport. Yes, maybe if you look at American versus Canadian versus European or whatever, but there's not many African-Americans or certainly people of Asian heritage playing. And when these stories come to light, you can kind of, okay, well, maybe this is why players like him aren't being well-received by him. So, yeah, let's just flush out all the bad ones. I have a feeling this isn't the end of it either. There's probably going to be more names brought up, maybe not as major as Bill Peters or whatever, but it's not looking good, though.
No, it's not. But that's where we'll leave that for now, and we'll see how that develops. We're running out of time here, so let's get to quick picks and bold predictions as we always do to end the show.
Woo!
Quick picks starting in the NFL. 49ers at Saints. I'm going with the Saints. I feel like this game could go either way, but they're at home. San Francisco's lost some games against top teams. I think the Saints are a top team. I'll go with the Saints.
I'm going with the Niners. I picked them last week against the Ravens, and that was a poor decision. So surely I'll pick them 2 weeks in a row and hopefully make up some ground on this one. Titans, Raiders, big battle for the wild card. Both on the outside looking in. The Raiders are undefeated at home this season, and they play this week at home. So I'm going to go with Oakland once again. John Gruden likes his Oakland crowd. One last season with him. He's going to make it a good one. Tennessee, they've been good, but has to end at some point.
I still think the Raiders are going to drop off. I love the Tennessee defense. Ryan Tannehill's playing fantastic football. I'm going with the Tennessee Titans. Chiefs at Patriots. We're going to have this one different, too. I have the Patriots. It's a good New England defense against a good Kansas City offense. It's a very okay Patriots offense going against a very bad Kansas City defense. Patriots.
Chiefs are clicking right now. Patriots are looking for all the right answers on offense. They're not finding them. Maybe James White and Edelman will surface, but most likely it'll be Patrick Mahomes surfacing many times in the end zone with a W at the end of the day. Chiefs all the way. Staying in football, transitioning to college, lots of playoff implications in these conference championships. SEC is going to have number 4 Georgia defeat number 2 LSU, give them their first loss in the season. I'm only saying this because I had Georgia in my college football playoff in the preseason. The only way they're going to do it is by beating LSU. They got a good defense. We'll see if they can stop Joe Burrow.
I did not have them in my college football playoff, and I like LSU very much. Tigers. Number 5, Utah, taking on number 13, Oregon. Both of these teams have been pretty dominant in a lot of their games this year. We kind of ruled out the Pac-12 earlier in the season, so for that reason, I'm going to go with Oregon.
Yeah, I'm going with Oregon, too. Had they not lost a few weeks ago, this would have been a no-brainer to pick for them. Suddenly, the rankings matter, but I think Oregon is still the better team. I have the Ducks. Finally, one we agree on. Cincinnati against Memphis, 20 versus 17. It's in the AAC. Whoever wins this will probably get a New Year's Six Bowl as the other group of five that gets in. Cincinnati played last week. They lost to Memphis. I picked Cincinnati last week. Surely I'm going to pick them again. They want redemption. 1 week later after they lost, I'm going with the Bearcats.
I don't necessarily like taking the team that to win two times in a row, but I'm going to because I like Memphis very much. I'm going with Memphis. Number 1, Ohio State taking on number 8, Wisconsin. We both kind of expressed our displeasure with this game earlier and the fact that it wouldn't be much of a game. I think Ohio State will win handily.
I'd be surprised if Wisconsin kept it within two scores. Buckeyes all the way. That's it for bowl or quick picks. We got bowl predictions still. So I was going to have something about Urban Meyer to USC, but since Clay Helton's being retained, he's going to not be involved in this, but I'll keep the other two. Mike McCarthy to Dallas. Jason Garrett to New York. Giants. New head coaches next year. Click it. Write it off. Take your bets on it. It's going to happen. McCarthy's out of the league this year. Shermer sucks. Jason Garrett sucks. They both need new ground. Apparently the Giants like Garrett. I like Mike McCarthy. Seems like a no-brainer to me.
Interesting. National Hockey League. I'm going to say the Boston Bruins by the end of the season will have 5 or fewer home regulation losses. Currently, they have 0.
Yeah, that's a good number.
They don't have a single one right now, so I'm saying 5 or less by the season's end.
Very nice. I wanted to say this last week or 2 weeks ago. I wasn't so sure. Over break, I saw something that made me sure. Luka Doncic is just turning the NBA on fire. MVP for the season. The youngster is in his second season. I think he's maybe 20. He is not old at all, and he is just tearing up everybody. Beat LeBron and the Lakers the other night. He is doing good things for the Mavericks. Look out for him come the end of the season. MVP for sure.
College football Power 5 championship games. 3 of them will have a margin of 7 or less. 2 of them will have a margin of 14 or more. I think there's some mismatches. I think there's some close rankings in there. We're going to have a diverse group, but that's what it's going to be.
Very interesting. Last one to the Pirates. They have a whole lot catcher. There is one big free agent on the market, which everybody in Pittsburgh knows. Would you like to take a guess?
No, tell me.
Russell Martin will be returning to the black and gold this year. We need to fill a void catcher. We need to fill the stands. People like Martin. He's a decent enough catcher. He worked with Charrington in Toronto. Go for it.
I like Russell Martin. Final bowl prediction, college football, LSU will be national champions. I like them a lot. I think they're in regardless of what happens this weekend, and I think they're the best team in college football. LSU Tigers, national champions, calling it right now.
Yeah, no, but whatever.
That is all the time we have. Some good ones there. We'll see how they pan out. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We will be back at the same time next week. Until then, good night, everybody.